told me I was her last grad student in 1996, and she still worked for another 15 years, but couldn't really believe it. But anyway, the topic today is around case interviews. Again, we're pretty limited, constrained with time, so I won't go in depth into any of the more matrices and strategies and things. It's really going to be an overview of what the case interviews are like, how you can prepare for them, and then touch on some of the frameworks and things that we need to be familiar with in going into that. First of all, what is a case interview? Most of you probably know, but it's basically a way to get an idea of how you approach a problem or strategies for doing that. So your first task when you go into that will be to find the problem, and then the second task ultimately will be to develop a solution to that problem. This can take one of two forms primarily. There's some rarely other ways, but basically either a full or mini case. These full cases last between 45 minutes to over an hour and are quite detailed and ask you to do calculations and run projections and things with a much deeper level of detail versus many cases that are 15 minutes, very top level, high view overviews of problems or how you would advise people in decision making, those kind of things. And the primary goals are the depth of analysis, depend on the format, so whether it's full or many cases, what kinds of things they're looking for, what kind of position you're applying for, will also dictate some of that. But basically the idea is that this type of interview is designed to test your abilities to solve problems in a structured fashion. So for trained scientists, this actually, in some ways, you have a leg up on other folks because this is the purpose of a PhD as well. How do you solve scientific problems in a structured way? Why do companies use cases? This can help you in terms of your approach to preparing. Case interviews provide a way to evaluate the reasoning skills in a fairly time-effective manner. The focus of this is to see, again, whether when you're under pressure, how do you solve a problem? I mean, for companies that use this is going to be a situation that you're faced with fairly regularly, so they need to know how you respond in this kind of situation. It also gives you an opportunity to demonstrate a depth of knowledge in a very short time based on your analysis and the strategies and frameworks that you use to complete that. Cases also provide an opportunity to give you the elevator test. Basically, if you were in an elevator with someone that was looking to hire you or to test your knowledge in a very short and succinct manner, you have an opportunity to demonstrate your ability to do that. But in some ways, it's a little bit archaic, but case interviews are often used because everybody else uses them. I mean, it's a common approach that people... that's a big reason that they're continued. Where do these cases come from? They're often problems that the consultant or the company or the interviewee that you're working with has either worked on themselves or at least finds interesting. These are just two examples of you're called into the CEO's office of a mid-sized manufacturer, blah, blah. So they're often disguised. They may say a well-known or a large UK-based petroleum company, right, has an environmental disaster in the US. So they would do things to make it, taking real-life situations, but disguising them. And they also, in some cases, I've heard made up on the spot based on your resume. So if they see that your work was in a topic area that they know something about, drug development, let's say, they may make up something off that. The good news is that they aren't meant to really test your knowledge of an industry, at least if you're going to a general BCG or a consulting firm, this is not going to be an industry test. Sometimes they may be, if you're going to a pharmaceutical company, that maybe you certainly would want to know about the industry and competitive products and things. But in general, as a general rule, it's not going to be an assessment of that. They may do that other ways. In terms of managing the interview, the first and foremost rule is to relax as much as you can anyway, or give the appearance of relaxing. These interviews are designed intentionally to put pressure on you, but it's also, as a result, one of the outcomes is to test your poise and composure under and horsepower, your ability to think and to really run with ideas under pressure. And the idea is, obviously you're far removed from it, but as a senior executive, would you pass these kinds of tests of being interviewed by the press or of being a face for the company? Taking notes, it is supposed to be an interactive process, so taking notes and keep track of where you are and what you're intending to do, what is the problem that you're trying to solve. Don't lose sight of that in kind of the flurry of details or of asking questions. And you also will have this as a record for you to be able to practice your presentation at the end of what your solution is. You also, in general, you have a limited amount of time, and you have to be able to use that to your advantage, knowing that other folks are limited by these same constraints, but that, you know, again, being able to not lose track of where you are and what you need. And there will be some dead time where you're left on your own, or you're allowed to do analysis on your own, and don't be afraid to be quiet, and, you know, don't feel a need to fill that space with chatter or with talking unnecessarily. There's also a portion of managing the interviewer. Although I said don't be afraid of silence, also don't be afraid to ask questions. In general, the blurb or the information that they give you at the beginning will not be sufficient to even begin to analyze the case. And that, I mean, it's intentionally done to do that to help you, or to help the interviewer assess what kinds of questions you ask and what kinds of gaps you see as most important. So being able to ask the reasoned, structured questions that benefit the analysis. In general, it's better not to ask for basic data around industry figures or things, but really focus on what's critical for you to be able to answer the question at hand. Make your assumptions reasonable, explicit. You can tell the person and interact with them about what you're assuming and why, and ask if it's reasonable. These are well accepted and encouraged behaviors, let's say, so make sure you're not going off on the wrong track. Using your notes as you work through the cases, using these interactively. In fact, in some cases, interviewers actually will judge what you've written and what you have diagrammed and your thought process, as well as what you're saying. And this, particularly for using things like diagrams or Porter's Five Forces, some of the things I'll talk about in a minute, this can actually save you quite a bit of time versus explaining things verbally, being able to do so in a picture. And again, it's really designed to be an interactive process, so the questions that you ask are as important as the answers that you give. In fact, a lot of times they probably don't really care what the exact final answer is. It's really what the questions you ask and the process that you use to get there, and the analytical process that you've used to achieve that. Because in business, a lot of times there are more than one right answer, so unfortunately. There's a number of frameworks in business school that cover these, but these are really what you can use to drive your analysis. These frameworks, partly because they provide a ready-made structure that both you and the interviewer can communicate around, so being able to do that, you know, gives you a baseline where you can start an analysis and you don't have to start from ground zero, but it's a common framework that you both understand and can apply. It also buys you time to be able to work through a complex case as you set up a certain framework, and provides a baseline for you to return to to make sure that you're staying grounded and answering the question or providing the solution that they wanted. In majority of cases, these interviewers are already familiar with most frameworks, so again, and they actually use them because they're useful in real life. And these folks will use them on a daily basis, so being able to implement these is actually quite helpful in, again, demonstrating your abilities to do what the interviewers do. And in some cases, you can create your own framework, but this is somewhat risky in that if it's not tested anyway, that the effectiveness of the framework, first of all, you have to explain the framework and then put in the data or the strategies that you're trying to explain. And this can be incredibly effective, but also risky. We'll just leave it at that. And again, the process of that you use to approach your analysis is really going to be linear and analytical. Is the best way to do that. I mean, the touching on different topics and not staying focused is really one of the best ways to get dinged out. I'm not going to go to any of these in detail, but these are some of the frameworks that I talked about of how would you approach a case and what would you use to explain your thinking to your interviewer. Economic frameworks, I mean, simple ones like supply and demand, profitability, cost structures, what are variable costs, fixed costs, marginal costs, how do those things play into the situation that the case is describing, things like operating leverage and elasticity, you know, being able to know these backwards and forwards is going to be important in in your answers that you supply. A number of industry level frameworks, the three C's, the value chain, supply chain, what components make up the industry, Porter's five forces I mentioned. I'll talk in more detail a little bit about that. And then Porter has some also generic strategies of that I'll talk about more in a minute. But anyway, economic frameworks, industry frameworks, and then frameworks for the firm level. So what's your company strategy of, you know, high growth markets versus market share, marketing frameworks, a number of those all acronymed, core competencies of the company, SWOT analysis, stakeholder analysis, and then depending on the case, you may be asked to work with other frameworks such as organizational models, political strategy, you know, entering a new company or, a new country or deciding between two countries to enter, macroeconomics and then matrices, which I'll touch on a little bit more. So almost, well, 8 out of 10, 80% of almost all of all consulting cases will have basic economics at some level in the case. So being able to understand what's, you know, supply and demand, draw curves to show that, understanding what profitability means and assessing that demand elasticity. And in fact, even if economics is not sort of explicit in the case, there will be some basic economic principles in other frameworks. For example, Porter's five forces, it's actually a lot like the parameters of a demand curve of what, you know, market demand looks like. Other frameworks are based on different economic relationships. So it's really being able to understand these sort of basic, simple economic frameworks actually informs other components as well that are higher level. Just as an example of what profitability is, right? Being able to calculate revenue, price times the quantity minus your costs. So variable cost times the quantity plus your fixed costs if you're a factory. So being able to, any kind of fixed costs. So being able to understand why changes in revenue, if they're due to a change in the quantity or the prices have changed in the market or some interaction of both, and then being able to address cost issues if, you know, variable costs do vary directly with quantities, so by producing more you have higher levels of these versus a fixed cost component, which is set, you know, you buy a factory, there's going to be certain costs associated with that even if it's not working. So being able to, you know, understand and assess profitability of a company or of a factory, these are, you know, fairly basic components, I would say, to know for what case studies, to be able to really successfully do these. So again, if firms have, you know, were profitable and now are not, what's happened to the price, quantity, and cost? I mean, that's a very simple and straightforward case that you would be, you know, almost certainly asked. So economic frameworks, industry-level frameworks, these are typically used to get a view of the competitive landscape. So what are other companies in the same industry doing in airlines or pharmaceuticals? This can be very helpful in terms of profitability. What's happened in the rest of the industry? Are they exiting the industry or are they reducing prices to dump product? It can be a helpful way to search for why something's happened on the profitability side. What's changed to cause profitability to change? However, I would caution you to be careful about spending too much time on this because it can take a lot of time and you may not actually help you in finally solving the problem or coming up with a decision. If it's to choose between two different factories, let's say, knowing what's going on in an industry won't necessarily help you in making that decision. Just an example of another, you know, very common framework of Porter's five forces, basically five components of industry that affect the company level. So what's going on with the suppliers to the company, with customers, you know, buyers from the company, our new entrants, is there a high threat of that? And, you know, is it an ice cream shop or is it a pharmaceutical company? The threat of substitutes, can people, instead of buying drugs, can they buy natural products? And then within the industry, is there a high degree of competitiveness and rivalry? So being able to assess, you know, industry, even just briefly, industry level trends and forces using this kind of framework is incredibly helpful. And there's actually a sixth force that he didn't suggest called complementary products like milk with coffee or aluminum cans, you know, aluminum providers and soft drink manufacturers. So how can those complementary products be added to really describe the industry dynamics and what's going on? But again, not spending a lot of time on this kind of very high-level analysis if it's not critical to your answering the question. To move down to the firm level, then, the frameworks, these are useful to be able to identify issues within a company and then to structure the potential solution. So, I mean, really what the purpose of the case is about, what are the issues and how do you solve them. There's a number of different ones I won't go into detail, except for the gross share matrix I'll show next, but basically a number of at least jargon or language that you need to be familiar with in terms of being able to solve these cases well. This is a BCG developed, Boston Consulting Group developed this, what they call a gross share matrix. So it's a very common 2x2 matrices you see all the time in these kind of assessments. So growth rate on, you know, on the y-axis, let's say, and market share, and then different terms that people use for different products, or this can be, you know, products or factories or whatever you can be used for a lot of different things. But basically, do products in this area clearly you would want to keep, certain ones here as well, and then how do you assess, you know, question mark or low growth dogs, they say, and what, how do you redistribute your mix of products or industries or products or factories to be able to optimize this, you know, as part of your portfolio. Just to touch on the marketing frameworks briefly, these will, you know, allow you to analyze what's going on in the marketplace. These, in detail, you probably, at least for sort of general consulting, I would say, aren't quite as critical unless you're going for a market analyst or some kind of position that really requires it. What is, you know, being able to assess market segment, serving the market, the 4 P's, serving the market effectively, reaching a target market and influencing them. But basically how, you know, the idea of these frameworks, again, is to answer or provide the solution to the question of how, you know, what's changed with customer tastes, how do customers perceive the product, and are there new products, you know, new entrants that have changed sort of the market dynamics, and how can you respond to those? An example of stakeholder analysis, again, if you were a large British-based petroleum company and had an environmental disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, how would these different stakeholders respond to that, and how can you, you know, manage these interactions with customers or employees or local or international politicians? Being able to have an idea of, you know, by saying, well, by analyzing stakeholder analysis, it calls to mind this kind of diagram. So again, it saves you time in being able to really get to the solution itself rather than struggling with explaining yourself. And another common one I mentioned, 2x2 matrices are quite common. You know, as a sample, if you're the head of R&D for a large pharma company and there's a new process because of sequencing of the human genome, you know, how do you assess how to respond to this technology or this new process? If it's, you know, high impact and a core business, you have to integrate it and you do whatever it takes to do that. High impact, non-core, you outsource it or, you know, basically let someone else work on it as well, but try and integrate it as well. Low impact, you evaluate what it would take to, how relevant it is to what you're doing, and then the switching costs from whatever technology or process you're using now. And then, you know, finally, low impact, if it's, you watch and make sure it becomes relevant. So anyway, it's a very helpful and succinct way to organize your thoughts in terms of how you would respond to market competitiveness and new, you know, entrance of technology or whatever is disrupting the market. Choosing the right framework is actually mostly a matter of practice, so that would be one of my sort of takeaway advice things, is be able to practice with peers if there's folks either in this room or that you know that are interested in doing these kind of frameworks. To be able to have practice interviews is incredibly helpful. You also have to obviously know the core frameworks cold and being able to mix and match them with different types of cases. There's a number of case, you know, examples on the internet. McKinsey has an assessment test on the internet, so there's good resources for actually being able to practice these in ways that are accurate, you know, accurately represent what's going to happen in a real life situation. This was in my MBA program. I had one person in my cohort from Accenture, and when he interviewed people, he said that this was one of the most common problems that people had, was to trying to figure out which one was the best, and he said to do that, basically pay attention to what the problem's describing and how, and which of the frameworks then best applies to that problem. So to really identify critical issues, to not get lost in the details, that in some ways all cases are basically generic. It's really an analytical problem that you need to, you don't want to be distracted by the details. And that once this critical issue is identified, the proper framework will generally select itself in some ways. Again, no, assuming the assumption is that you know these frameworks well. So hopefully, you know, now leaving here today, you'll know what a case interview is and what it isn't, what it's designed to do, how to manage both your response to a case as well as the interviewer. Some of the major frameworks, obviously we didn't have time to go in any depth into any of these. And then how to look for appropriate competitive responses as a company. How do I respond to this threat or this technology? What are some ways that I can develop these competitive responses? And I'll acknowledge Bill Blackwell from Rice, who put together a lot of these, the ideas, and was a really good resource for me. And then that's my email. So if you have questions or want to follow up, I'm happy to do that. I haven't actually worked at a consulting company, been on the hiring manager side, but clearly business schools, you use work through cases all the time. It's for grades instead of a job, but it's still a different process. But so 10:45 is our time.
We have 15 minutes for filling session. Right. I don't have any questions.
Sure.
So you said to be sure to know the core frameworks cold.
Yeah.
Which ones do you consider core? Because they're a bazillion, and I find that can be overwhelming rather than you spend all your time thinking about where to go with all the frameworks.
Yeah.
Rather than
part of it, so there's a lot of them, and I think some of them, like I said, like the marketing ones, for example, those probably aren't core if you're not going to be a market analyst or marketing specialist type of person. I mean, I think you would need to know what the four P's are, for example. I mean, there's some that are, so I guess there's two parts. There's ones of sort of what should you know the jargon versus should you know it in depth and how to really use it, on a day-to-day basis. So the marketing ones, for example, I would say if you're going into consulting, it's probably not as critical as, Porter's Five Forces or more of the industry level analysis. I mean, so which ones are core? I mean, certainly the more you know, the better off you are. At least being able to discuss them, even if it's not something that you know in depth. I mean, the industry level ones of Porter's Five Forces, the a 2x2 matrix of how do assess market competitive responses. But of the ones I listed, I mean, I think those are, you pretty much have to know most of them. At least for on the off chance that the interviewer is going to say, how would you apply this framework, to it, that you at least have to be conversant, let's say, in those. I think there's a handful that you probably would need that you use most often. I mean, like the economic principles, those are clearly critical profitability and demand, supply-demand, and those kind of curves you have to be able to draw and understand, but the other ones, I would say more conversant versus depth of knowledge. But yeah, it's a lot. I mean, we spend a year or 2 years in business school learning these things, and so it would be, I guess, if there are ways to audit classes here or sit in on some things. I mean, it's the gap. I mean, the advantage for PhD scientists, and they told us this in at INSEAD, I mean, they really like those kind of folks because they know they can be analytical and think through things well and linear in their thinking and solve complex problems. But the downside is that there is a language and a jargon, just like for science, that business school teaches you. I mean, it's one of your things you come away with. So I would at least know what each of those are and be conversant in using them, whether you could apply them from memory. It depends on the position you're applying for. That's a long answer, maybe.
With respect to companies like biotech companies and pharmaceutical companies,
yeah.
Biotech companies, I'm just curious, what kind of case studies they basically come with apart from economics or case studies.
So I mean, I've had, I finished my MBA in December and came back here in January, and I've been looking for full-time positions since then and had, you know, 100 probably phone interviews, and I've never had a case study for, and looking at business development positions mostly in pharmaceutical and biotech companies, and I've never had a case study interview as part of my interview process. So I think it's more, in that case, I think they test more your industry knowledge. I mean, they would say, well, I have had people say, well, what are your, you know, who are the main competitors in our field and how would you deal with them, or how would you identify customers, you know, we have a technology platform, how would you identify that? So I suppose in some ways there are cases, but it's kind of real life, what would you do in your first, you know, 100 days at the company? So I think that's pretty generalizable. I don't think in general anyway, in pharma and biotech, that they would tend to use this type of interview process. More behavioral, you know, tell me about a time that you were angry at a coworker, how did you deal with it? Or, you know, very specific industry or product level knowledge around that.
Okay.